Oh, look what I wrote. Public outreach.
Did Jack give you a rundown on it?
Who's running out of money? Who's we?
We Hunter's Point, the program for buyback for the district.
Yeah, fireplace? 2 days.
Yeah. The retail is going to be
good and aggressive.
That's a regular little San Francisco cop, isn't it?
The woman with the pearls is the big pearls is from the Perth Association. Those probably are not pearls, but whatever they look like. She was there giving everyone a scowl.
And then he suggested stabbing the man
with it. Okay.
Wow.
She did not like this. Damn, you're on the right side of things.
I don't have any sense of humor about stuff like that.
All right, well, good morning, everyone. If I could call this meeting to order, this is the Board of Directors for the Bay Area Air Quality Management District Board in the meeting of February 20th. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back. It seems like we haven't been together in months, and it's just a little over a month that we had our retreat in. And that was, I think, quite well received, and we all learned a lot, and could see where we're going in the future. So if we could have a roll call, please. Vanessa.
On the roll for the Board of Directors regular meeting of Wednesday, February the 20th, Director Bates, Director Brown,
here.
Director Daly,
here.
Director Dunnigan,
here.
Director Garner, Director Joya, Director Haggerty, Director Kishimoto,
here.
Director Klatt,
here.
Director Niss, Director Lockhart,
here.
Director McGoldrich, Director Miley, Director Ross,
here.
Director Szymanski,
here.
Director Silva, Director Smith,
here.
Director Torliak,
here.
Director Okama, Director Wagenknecht,
here.
Director Yeager,
here.
And Chairperson Jerry Hill.
Here.
We have 13 members present. We do have a quorum.
That's wonderful. Thank you all for being here this morning. If you'd all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now we get to move into an item on the agenda that gives me great pleasure in welcoming a new member to our board, someone that I've known for a long time, that great supervisor from Santa Clara County, Supervisor Ken Yeager. Ken, welcome. And Mary Ann, I believe, will be swearing Ken in this morning. Great. Now it's official. Ken, welcome and thank you. I think you'll enjoy this board. I think everyone on the board is has a good time, and we accomplish an awful lot for the air quality in the Bay Area. And so we're looking forward to your contributions, Ken. Proclamations and commendations? I think we have none, so we'll move into public comment period. This is an opportunity for anyone in the audience to speak to an item that's not on our agenda this morning. Is there anyone who would care to address the board? Seeing no one, we will move to the consent calendar.
I'll move the consent calendar.
Is there a motion and a second on the consent calendar, items 1 through 5. Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is carried unanimously without opposition. Moving to item number 6, report of the Public Outreach Committee. Director Ross. Former Chair Ross.
Thank you, Chair Hill. The committee met on Thursday, February 14th, 2008. The committee received an update and recommendation on the Cleaner Burning and Technology Incentive Program. Due to the overwhelming response from residents on the program, the committee provided direction to staff on modifications to the program. Modifications to, and they include, 1, address demand for incentives retroactively to those on a waiting list that were locked out, that missed out on the original 100,000. 2, target program to support natural gas sets and natural gas fireplaces in lieu of doing wood-burning fireplaces, deleting log sets, EPA-certified wood-burning devices, and pellet stoves. And 3, administer program using in-house staff. The committee recommends that the Board of Directors approve an increase to the Cleaner Burning Technology Program incentive funding in the amount of $400,000 with a commensurate transfer of $400,000 from the designated reserve for Cleaner Burning Technology Incentive Program and a corresponding increase to fiscal year 2007-2008 Program 302 budget. The committee considered a request to extend contracts for media employer relations, advertising design, public opinion surveying, and community outreach for public outreach programs. Future direction was provided to staff from the committee. The committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the Executive Officer APCO to execute contract extensions through August 15, 2008 to O'Rourke PR Incorporated, not to exceed $140,000, Allison and Partners in an amount not to exceed $400,000, and to authorize the APCO to execute contract extensions through March 31st, 2009, to Community Focus in an amount not to exceed $180,000, and True North in an amount not to exceed $175,000. Finally, the committee received an update on the 2008 Spare the Air campaign. The committee provided direction to staff. The next meeting of the committee is scheduled for Monday, March 3rd, 2008, at 9:30 a.m., I move and beseech that the Board of Directors approve the recommendations and report of the Public Outreach Committee.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Director Ross. A motion by Director Ross and a second by Director Wagenknecht. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carried without opposition. Thank you. Item number 7, summary of the 2007-2008 winter PM season. Mr. Broadbent. Or Mr. Kendall. Good morning.
Yes, Gary. Mr. Chairman. Our Director of Technical Services, Mr. Gary Kendall, is going to give you a brief presentation. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'll follow up with just a few comments about the upcoming Spare the Air campaign following the direction of the Public Outreach Committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Chair Hill, members of the board. I'll be presenting a summary of the PM season, winter PM season, and also a quick review of last summer's ozone season and our attainment status. Compared to the relatively cold, dry weather we had last winter, this winter had more rainy and windy days. And as a result, the PM2.5 standard was exceeded only on 7 days compared to 27 days last winter. Similarly, we only called Spare the Air tonight on 6 days compared to 30 days last winter. So how does this winter compare with previous winters? Just like ozone, year-to-year changes in the weather affect the number of days that the PM2.5 standard is exceeded. In this chart, we're showing the number of days that the standard was exceeded over the last 8 winters, and also the seasonal, that is November through February, rainfall totals. In general, winters that have more rainy and windy days have fewer days over the standard compared to winters with lower rainfall and light winds. Next, we'll have a look at the Bay Area's PM trends in terms of the new PM 2.5 standard. Again, similar to ozone, attainment of the PM 2.5 standard is based on three-year averages. And in this chart, we're showing the trend in the three-year average for the Bay Area for each of the three-year periods starting with 2001. Although EPA has not made formal attainment, non-attainment designations for this new PM 2.5 standard, our monitoring data show that the Bay Area does not meet the new standard based on measurements at San Jose and Vallejo. Now, EPA will be making the formal designations in December of this year. Those designations must be based on 2004 through 2006 data. But EPA can also consider 2005 through 2007 data. In either case, you can see that we don't meet the standard. So we expect to be designated as non-attainment for this new standard. Similar to ozone, there are many sources of PM 2.5 and PM 2.5 precursors. We've shown you this pie chart many times before. And as you can see, wood smoke at 33% comprises the largest fraction of winter PM 2.5. That's winter is the period when we have the highest PM 2.5 levels, and it also drives our attainment, non-attainment status. So based on that, we know that we're going to need to implement controls on wood smoke to be able to meet the new PM 2.5 standard. The transitioning now to ozone, the winter spear of the air season actually ended on February 11th. So we're now beginning to look ahead to this summer and the ozone season. So let me just review very quickly what happened last summer and what our attainment status is for the current standard. Compared to the very hot weather that you may remember, record-setting temperatures in the summer of 2006, 2007 was much cooler. And as a result, we only had one day over the current national 8-hour ozone standard, compared to 12 days during the summer of 2006. In spite of that, our monitoring data show that we have attained the current national ozone standard since 2004. And that attainment actually continued through 2005, 6, and 7, again, in spite of the very hot weather we had in 2006. However, that's the good news part of the slide. The bad news is that EPA has proposed revising the national ozone standard from a level of 85, where it is now, to a range between 70 and 75. And our insider information tells us that EPA is leaning towards a value of 75. But even if the new standard is set at a level of 75, we expect to be non-attainment for that new standard. So we need to look ahead, we need to look forward, and continue our program of reducing ozone precursors. In 2005, the board adopted the Bay Area Ozone Strategy, and that included 38 control measures and 20 further study measures. And a result of that strategy, ozone precursors will continue to be reduced, but probably not enough to meet the state standards or potentially the revised national ozone standards. So we need to continue to work on that. And later this year, the ozone strategy is scheduled for updating. So we expect to be taking a revised or updated ozone strategy to the board in the calendar year 2008. That concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Gary. Are there questions?
Yes.
Vice Chair Corliett.
Of the 38 and the 20 that you mentioned, how many have we implemented so far?
I'm going to have to turn to Jane Roggenkamp to get the answer to that question.
Let's see. We have still a few regulatory measures, so stationary source control measures to implement.
Such as?
Graphic arts, and let's see, 9-7, small boilers, and there's wood products update. These are all rules that they're existing rules, but we will be bringing to the board for their consideration amendments to these rules. Let's see. Architectural coatings rule will get updated. And I think there's one or two more. So we still have a number to do for the balance of this year and into next year. And then there's a number of the other measures, our mobile source measures that are like our grant programs or transportation measures that we work on with MTC. And so those are sort of ongoing measures to keep improving our transportation systems and reducing emissions from mobile sources through our grant programs.
Through the chair, can we get something back that shows us, you know, of the 38 and the 20, what we have and haven't
right.
adopted just on a chart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you looking at, if I could just add the, to see how we're going to get there, if it does drop to 75, you know, what, you know, if these measures will take us how far and what do we need to do on top of that?
Mr. Chairman, should EPA drop the standard, and Director Kendall has indicated that he, that's our understanding as well. All of us are anticipating that move. That will essentially initiate a whole round of planning. Mm-hmm. So we'll conduct ourselves in a manner where we'll put together a plan, put some modeling together. I would just tell you intuitively the measures that we are slated still to bring to you would not be able to bring us down below that 75. We'd have to take a look at just what are the other measures that are possible. Okay. Motor vehicle fleet continues to get cleaner and cleaner, but it's also starting to plateau out as well. So there's a whole cadre of things we'd want to consider.
Okay, thank you. Director Ross.
Hi, thank you, Chair Hill. On the winter PM, Gary, because of the weather, it seems like we have fewer, but relative, but Napa, I see the Napa Vallejo and San Jose, we had those. Are those historically our toughest areas?
In the more recent period, if you take a look at this chart that shows you the three-year averages, I would say that certainly San Jose, which has been a problem area since the original standard was adopted, and also if you look back in the early years, Vallejo. Napa is a site where we've just recently added a continuous PM 2.5 monitor, so we don't have a long record at Napa like we do for a lot of the other sites, but I think that's also a problem area. I think you're right.
Okay, and on the ozone during the summer, Jack touched on a little bit. I mean, we usually hover in the high season. We hover around the low 80s. I mean, I guess my question is, what's our background? We're in the about 80. It's just background, aren't we?
Director Ross, I think you're talking about the typical, if I understand you, concentrations we see during the summer. And yes, it often gets into the 80s. That's an 8-hour average. Background is actually an important factor, particularly when you lower the standard to something like 70 or 75. Background would be the level that's in the air that's sort of entering the region at the coast coming from the ocean. And we generally think in the summer the background level is being about 40. So if the standard is dropped to somewhere between 70 and 75, something like a little over half of what we've got to deal with is already at background. So it makes attainment even that much more difficult because the background is already half the standard.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that up. Director Kishimoto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the table that you have that summarizes the breakdown by the area, the one before that, yes. Is that the one? The San Jose and Vallejo, you mentioned, has always been problems. Can you, and if you look at the pie chart by those areas, are they different, and or can you kind of summarize why those two areas are the problem areas?
It's just like ozone. It's a combination of meteorology and location. In terms of composition of winter PM, this data that we're showing you in this particular pie chart is based on San Jose, but back in 2000-2001, there were measurements in Northern California as part of a larger field study that included Sacramento, San Joaquin, and other parts of Northern California, Monterey. And measurements were made at places like Bethel Island, San Francisco, and Vallejo. I'm sorry, not Vallejo, Livermore. And those measurements are similar. While they're not exactly the same, they're similar. So if you look at San Jose, it's kind of your typical inland valley. It's sort of the Livermore of PM, if you will. You know, we have Livermore as an inland valley that, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That's an inland valley that is essentially downwind of the source area, which is the Central Bay Area. You know, you kind of think of the Bay Bridge and area, you know, all draw a circle around the Bay Bridge, and that's an important source area for emissions of ozone precursors. And so during the summer, when it's hot, you have essentially little or no wind in the morning. All these emissions are released, and then you have very light winds in the afternoon. Those winds gently transport the ozone precursors from the west to the east, and they sort of hit Livermore at just the worst time when the ozone levels are building up. In San Jose, during the winter, you've got kind of the opposite effect. You get high levels during the winter evenings. It's, again, kind of an inland valley, and so during the day you have light winds or almost no winds, and then at night you get this phenomenon that's called downslope flow. In other words, the air sort of flows from up on the hills and the mountains down to the valley, but at a very low speed, so it tends to hold the PM emissions in and gently transport them, you know, from the surrounding hills down to the city of San Jose. Vallejo is a little bit more complicated. I'm not a meteorologist. I'd have to talk to one of my meteorologists, but we do believe it's an area where PM emissions from the Central Valley as well as the northern part of the Bay Area can be transported during the evening hours. So you've got a wind pattern that's different in the winter. Winds out of the north or northeast or the east taking these PM emissions and transporting them to, let's say, toward Vallejo at the worst possible time. So that's a thumbnail description of what goes on.
Just a quick follow-up. So do you have any idea of, like, what percentage comes from the transport from versus what's generated in that?
Actually, we're now embarking on modeling for PM2.5. The Bay Area and the United States regulatory agencies have tremendous number of years of experience in doing atmospheric modeling for the formation of ozone and then asking questions about what happens if you reduce the emissions from cars by a certain percentage and factories and so on. In the field of modeling for fine PM, we're in the infancy, and we're just beginning to do that kind of modeling. So we don't really have a good answer yet.
But coast.
I'm sorry?
It's coming from South Coast.
Possibly. But as a part of doing that monitoring, we'll be able to answer questions like how much of our PM problem is due to transport. We suspect that a significant portion of it could be due to transport.
Director Brown.
Let me, Jack. Mm-hmm. Wood smoke is 33% our biggest thing. Did we originally allocate 400,000 of that, and then we just put 100,000 instead? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, we just 5 minutes ago allocated about $1 million for contracts. If this is a real serious concern to us, now, and maybe those are apples and oranges, maybe you got to put $1 million into this, into those contracts. But if this is as serious as I think it is, why wouldn't we take 500 or $1 million, put it into wood smoke for the Bay Area, and make a difference? Am I off base here?
Right, no. Director Brown, I would agree with you. What you just did is you took the remainder of what was in the reserves and authorized us to put it into the program. So it's another 400,000. And some of the contracts will actually help us in this wood smoke campaign, but for the most part, you're going to be hearing a lot during this summer the outreach campaign, the education campaign, and the rulemaking. It's kind of a three-prong approach. And I think, though, I will tell you at the outset that if you were to seriously put some kind of program together that would have natural gas inserts on all fireplaces and things like that in the Bay Area, I don't think we have enough resources for that. Because that's probably 10, 20, 30. We're actually trying to price that out for you. But we think we can create a small incentive program to really, you know, put the message out there and get those folks, some of them at least, incentivizing to change over.
If I may, I've asked on more than a few occasions in the past about that we are going after things at 0.1%, because those are the only places we could go. And you wonder what $500,000 or $1 million would do. And at some point, maybe you could show us that.
Okay.
That if we throw this amount of money in, it would do this much. You know what I'm saying?
No, Director Brown, actually, that's the type of presentation for the Public Outreach Committee meeting on the 3rd of March. That's what we're planning to do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Brown. Director Joya.
I want to make sure I understand the activities that are included under off-road. Are you talking, clearly all trucks at ports are in the on-road category. Explain sort of the off-road as sort of the traditional
Correct.
Off-road vehicles we think of. I'm sort of seeing high.
Off-road is a combination of, essentially you have to have a license to be on the road.
Right.
And so then everything else falls into that category. So you're talking about construction equipment,
agricultural
equipment, ships.
Right.
Trains, planes.
Okay, so that rail is included in this Correct. Category as well. Correct. Any sense of what percent of that includes, what component?
For trains?
Yeah.
We look to Gene.
You know, maybe just in the future, it'd be interesting to get a breakdown of that off-road category of okay. agriculture, rail, especially rail and ports. Okay. We're obviously doing other work on ports, so it would be useful just to break that out further.
And Gary, is this directly emitted, or is this also include secondary information?
It actually includes everything, Jack, because you've got not only the direct PM emissions from off-road and on-road diesel sources, but you got the NOx that's contributing to the formation
right.
of secondary
so
PM.
So then the off-road share will be then both.
So marine includes the ships, whereas port activities that are off-road are in the 20% off-road. Category.
That's correct.
Okay. So you'll just break that out for us?
We can. We can.
Director Joy, let me just correct that. It's a little confusing. Marine there really refers to a little bit of sea salt that shows up in fine PM. Off-road actually includes marine activities.
Okay. So vessel ships, port. Is all off-road.
Trains, cargo handling equipment, yeah. construction equipment, ag, all
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, I think that would be really useful to break out, just so we understand that. Yeah.
I would request the same breakdown, please.
So, Mr. Chairman, we'll send that to the entire board. We'll break that down.
Yeah. Karen, and that was everybody.
It's very relevant
everybody.
To our county. Mm-hmm.
Right, very good. Thank you. Director Yeager.
Yes. So, On the chart that you have up, you had said that this was a snapshot of the city of San Jose?
That's correct. It's based on measurements in San Jose.
Right. So under refining, those are the refineries there? And I'm pretty sure there aren't any in San Jose. So trying to figure out how this all sort of works.
That is absolutely correct. And when you do this, this is called chemical mass balance analysis. And when you do this, it's really a trial and error analysis where you take the composition of the PM from each of the different source categories, and then you use a computer model to fit it to what you actually measure at the particular site. The refining emissions have a fingerprint of sulfur, and you do get a certain amount of sulfur in the measurement. I agree with you. I think that attribution is somewhat suspect, although we do have transport. What happens during the winter is you can have northerly winds. So the refineries are, as you know, are up in the Richmond-Martinez area to the north of San Jose. They do emit a significant amount of a chemical called sulfur dioxide. The sulfur dioxide is converted to something called sulfate in the atmosphere. ultimately converted to sulfuric acid. That reacts with another chemical called ammonia, and it forms a secondary particulate matter, which is referred to as ammonium sulfate. That's a very fine particle because it's formed from chemicals that are present in the atmosphere as gases, and then that can be transported with the northerly wind to the south. So I agree with you that the absolute percentage sounds high, but there can be a contribution by that mechanism.
So when you go back to the PM chart where San Jose, as you were saying, is sort of out of compliance, if that's the
correct
right word, you take into consideration all these other sort of factors like refining. Is that all sort of in that calculation?
Yes. Actually, when we do the modeling, Director Kishimoto was asking about that
right,
earlier.
Right.
When we do the modeling, which is a computer model where you put in the meteorology and all the emissions and so forth, and then you use the model to hopefully reproduce your actual measurements, then you know that the model is performing properly. And then you can ask the model, what happens if I change the emissions from cars, trucks, trains, ships, refineries, whatever, and see what effect that has on air quality.
And as you, when you had answered her question, we're trying to get a better sense of what's actually generated in the city as opposed to what is flowing in from elsewhere.
Actually, we're trying to get a better sense of both of those things, and the modeling will let us do that.
Great. Thank you.
And then, Ken, we'd like you to repeat all of those, that analysis next month when we have our next meeting, please. That's the first test as a new member of the board. Further questions? I see we do. Director Smith.
Yeah, I had just a question about the pie chart and why we zeroed in on San Jose as opposed to doing...
They're easy to get at?
Yeah, but I'm not... My point is this, is if we wanted to do something locally to go after some of these issues, it'd be helpful to know precisely in Sonoma County what this pie would look like.
Actually, I'm sorry.
I think it'd be helpful to have this in, for all jurisdictions, as well as an overlay of the entire district's jurisdiction. Is that something that you can produce, or is it of minor value, or why didn't we use that?
It's of tremendous value, and we're actually working on that starting this year. We're going to be deploying special monitors that collect PM samples on three different filters. And the reason you do that is you have to do different analyses for different chemicals. And you can look at metals on one kind of filter and carbon on another and sulfate and nitrate on another. So it takes a very special kind of research sampler to collect these samples. The reason we have these measurements at San Jose is because traditionally the PM air quality has been the worst in San Jose. And this monitoring effort was funded by EPA. If you go back and take a look at this chart, I think San Jose typically has the highest values on the three-year average, so that was why EPA made that decision to fund that monitoring. I asked Jack for money for this year's budget to fund additional composition monitoring at multiple locations, and he gave me the funding, so we're actually starting on that.
Say he wouldn't give it to you.
No, he
say dump
actually.
Where's the
he's really good when. Well, it's not for fireplace chainsaws, but it's to do more of this kind of monitoring to learn the composition of PM in different locations. The people that are charged with doing the monitoring, the modeling and developing the non-attainment plan, the plan that will help us determine how to come into compliance with these standards. We're working with them very carefully, and we're going to site these monitors in locations where they need additional information. We haven't made the final decision yet, but I think we're deploying three or four additional monitors that will give us this pie chart in other locations.
And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but to follow Director Yeager's comments about specifics about how these things would affect each jurisdiction, because as we go forward, especially with the EPA talking about changing the formula to 85 or down to 75, it seems to me that we need to partner with local governments wherever we can to get them to do some of the heavy lifting if the requirements change. And the only way you can actually do that is if you know exactly what's going on in your jurisdiction. And like San Jose or Santa Clara County, Sonoma doesn't have any refineries either.
But that's something I can't do anything about locally, but I can deal with wood smoke or
we
off-road
could
or
offer
others.
Some.
No, thank you.
Oh.
Pass. It's just fine. So anyway, but thank you for that.
I think you make very good points, Director Smith.
We have lots.
Director Nish?
After our meeting of last month where we had a long discussion about subsidizing gas fireplaces, we actually did switch. But one of the things, aside from the fact that it costs you somewhere between $300 and $500, probably most of you know that. And the other part I found interesting, though, was to ask the salesperson about how much it costs per day for the gas. And he said roughly 80 cents to a dollar. So I realized there's just always trade-offs, no matter what you're doing. And I think it's important to also find out what else does it cost and what other natural resource are you using. So it keeps down the... It certainly keeps down the wood particle pollution, but in addition, it's also using gas. So I don't know what others of you have found, but I was interested in that figure. So if you're going to use your fireplace every day, you're going to up your utilities bill.
A quart of wood costs a few dollars too, I think. If you were to burn the wood, it would cost a lot too.
Yeah, and wood is a natural resource, but gas is something we don't talk about as often.
Right, that's true. Director Szymanski.
Yeah, just a real quick question. With the potential of the EPA lowering the standards to 75, what repercussions or penalties could the district be involved in? Are there any penalties, or is it just something we should look for and attain? Or are we penalized in any way for not attaining this?
Let me start the answer, and Jack is much more expert in this than I am, but let me take a stab at that. If EPA revises the standard from 85 down to somewhere between 70 and 75, they're scheduled to make that decision in March of this year. Then you begin a rather lengthy process where EPA then looks at relatively current monitoring data, makes decisions on whether a particular area is attainment or non-attainment. Then you start a planning SIP process where you have to get your emission inventory, do the modeling, determine what it would take to reduce in terms of emission reductions to meet the standard. And then there are future attainment dates. These are all in part of something called an implementation rule that sets specific target dates for when you have to meet the standard. If you fail to meet the standard or fail to develop a plan, there are sanctions and penalties. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Frodman.
Right. I think Gary did a good job. So really, what this district has faced in the past is concerns by EPA on the adequacy of our plan to demonstrate that we can attain the standard. That's where the transportation dollars have been held by EPA and other funding as well. So it's going to be incumbent upon us to make sure we put together a good plan, demonstrate to EPA that indeed by the measures that are contained in this plan, we'll be able to attain the standard by X date, presumably when they're calling for it in the Act. And so that's what's ahead of us when they do lower the standard. And it does take many years. And what's good about this organization is we don't wait for EPA to tell us you've got to put together a plan before we start implementing measures. We look to see where are cost-effective ways to get reductions, and you all have adopted a whole series of measures to move us forward. And I expect that's what we'll continue to do.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Seeing none. Gary, thank you very much for the great report and the great discussion today. Jack, you wanted to talk about Spare the Air.
Yes. Just real quickly... Director Ross covered a pretty lively discussion we had in our public outreach committee meeting, and I just wanted to give the board an update on those discussions because, as all of you are aware, our Spare the Air campaign is one in which I think most folks know us as the Spare the Air organization. And Vanessa, are you going to bring those up? I'll just real quickly, Mr. Chairman, two slides, a little bit of background. This program is one in which started actually back in the early 90s, and it was only an educational program designed to be able to essentially persuade the public to adopt clean air lifestyle choices, if you will, reduce driving, take other choices as well in terms of using products that don't emit VOCs like hairsprays and things like that. And there were health advisories, basically based on when the staff would forecast the next day's ozone. For this upcoming season, I just want to highlight for the board here, we start on June 2nd, and it goes all the way through about mid-October. That's just by way of background. Essentially, what the Public Outreach Committee heard last week was the fact that, and Vanessa, if you can just change the slide, was the fact that this is the last year of MTC's funding, and so we only have limited funding opportunities for this program. It looks like we may at least initially look like we can only fund one or possibly 2 days. And so since the committee met last week, we have sat down with MTC and started to look at what can be done here. I expressed the committee's desire to essentially continue the success of this program, that indeed the free transit element is, I think, a part of this program that needs to continue. The public continues to expect this, I think, when we do see hot, smoggy days. And so what we're doing as staff is we're cobbling together sort of a skeletal program, if you will, about what this could be, and we're going to bring back proposals to the committee to consider. And that is indeed why we're meeting again in just a relatively short period of time. We're meeting again on the 3rd of March, which is really just last week, and that's only a couple weeks away. So we think by then what we'll do is we'll have a scaled-down set of proposals for the committee to consider. What we're looking at, of course, is maybe just morning commutes on some of the key transit providers in the Bay Area that will allow us to use our limited resources as efficiently as possible, get through this season, and then our plan is that to ramp up the efforts to look at private funding for the summer 09 program. And this would be a program where we would be seeking private monies to be a part of a foundation that would be used to help fund the future Spirit of the Air programs. I'm just telling you, I think it makes a lot of sense as an organization that we begin to take somewhat be the primary funder of this program. In the past, what we've done is we've relied on MTC, and then we have been funding to the tune of about a quarter of the program. We think it makes a lot of sense to flip that, have a little bit, basically, a little bit more control of the program funding, if you will, allow us to get through this summer, but then continue this effort into years into the future. And that was the direction of the Public Outreach Committee, and I just wanted to, Mr. Chairman, let you all know that that's getting worked on. And there's a lot of press inquiries about this. What are we going to do? What's the summer going to be about? And we just are not there yet. So I'll hand it over, Mr. Chairman, or if Director Ross wants to add anything to my
Thank
comments.
Thank you, Jack. But Director Ross, did you want to add something to that?
I think it was covered very, very well. We have a limited number of dollars and a few options, and I think staff's going to present that more fully at the Public Outreach Committee.
Wonderful. Thank you. Director Bates.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, Jack, have you guys explored the possibility of providing free transportation for the morning hours and not in the evening? In other words, would that cut the cost in half? People would use, theoretically, public transportation to get to work for free.
Yes.
And then they would come back and pay their own way.
That's going to be clearly part of the staff's, one of the staff proposals for the board to consider would be just morning commutes. It doesn't necessarily cut it in half because there's all the costs associated with advertising and setting up the program, but it is a way in order to get the money to go further. I would tell you also that it makes a lot of sense to really take a look at the number of transit providers and ask ourselves whether we want to fund all 29 transit providers. We saw clear increases in some and not as much in others, and it has to do with a variety of factors. And so I can tell you we're much more willing to consider that. MTC is not. MTC would just as soon have all 29 providers be a part of this program. So that we're trying to work out those, and we'll have all that figured out by between now and the 3rd of March.
Okay, thank you. And before I call on Director Brown, I just want to make a comment. When I last month at the Senate Rules Committee, when I went for the confirmation of the CARB appointment, one of the first questions that Senator Perotta said is, is Hal Brown still on that board? Yeah. Director Brown.
Thank you for that. That was helpful. Jack, you may remember 3 or 4 years ago, I think the district took part in it, where we gave free transit for all school kids going to and from school in my mm-hmm. county on the regularly scheduled Golden Gate Transit buses. Mm-hmm. And prior to implementing that program, there were a total of, we looked at it very carefully, and there was a total of 15,000 trips taken by kids. After we put in the free bus rides for the kids, the first quarter, there were 45,000 trips taken by kids when it was free.
Wow.
It was phenomenal. We kept it up for 2 years. It cost us about $300 to $350 a year for 2 years, and the county paid for it entirely. And it ended because I think my board said, you know, schools, you got to do something here. You know, they pleaded no money, but phenomenal results. And I'm experiencing around every school in my district traffic jams, safety situations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to bring that back in Marin and find a stable funding source. But that's not like a capital improvement that you can get $500,000, $1 million. That's an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. But it worked, I mean, unbelievable. So just...
That's a good comment. Yeah. Look at that. That'd be great, Jack. Thank you. Director Troyer.
Jack, you mentioned that you're looking at maybe not doing it on some transit operators versus others, and I think that you have to have a real clear, clean message, and it has to be free transit throughout the Bay Area. Because if we just say it's only on this transit system, it's only on that transit system, I think it's not an easy message, and I think that we... also receive a lot of advertising through wrapping the buses, and that definitely augments, I think, our message and the Spare the Air program. So I wouldn't like to see us, you know, only do certain transit systems. I think we need to, again, keep it real clean and clear, just like the wood smoke.
Director Yeager?
Okay. Yes, I know that some of my fellow MTC commissioners will remember when we had a discussion about the Spare the Air campaign at an MTC meeting, and one of the questions that had come up, and I can't remember who asked it, was what are the long-term effects, or maybe even short-term effects, of offering free transit? Do we know if there are people who are riding it who've never ridden before and then are more apt then to take it in the future, or is it really just the same people who normally ride it, and now they don't have to pay that day? And I just thought it was a good discussion, and we didn't really know the answer. And I'm not sure that we have any more data about it, but I think it is something important for us to think about and try to see if, whether it's through surveys or other mechanisms, that we can learn more about what is going. It is an expensive program. I think everybody supports it, but we want to make sure that, again, it's having sort of the long-term effects that we want it to have.
Jack, can I?
Thank you, Director Ross.
And our newcomer, Director Yeager, just hit on where I was going to go with my comment, is that just like the secondhand wood smoke efforts with the gas fireplaces, we couldn't possibly change out 1 million fireplaces in the Bay Area. What we're trying to do is modify behavior and bring education to the Bay Area. And similarly with the Spare the Air program in the summer, we couldn't possibly give everyone free transit the whole summer long. We're just trying to raise awareness, and how do we do that in an efficacious manner? With 1 day or 2 days, we're going to, of course, have some health benefits from that, but mainly this is an educational opportunity, and whether it's 1 day, a day and a half, or 2 days, it's certainly not going to be enough. So we have to get the best educational bang for our buck that we can, because it's not about giving free rides. It's about encouraging behavior that's long-lasting, that has an effect that we can see down the road that transforms behavior. So that's, I think, our goal, and not just giving out free widgets or free bus tickets.
Thank you. Director Kishimoto.
Thank you. Are we considering other strategies, such as, for example, dramatically in emphasizing bike to work day, for example, to aim at long-term behavior changes? you know, we just had the bike tour come through Palo Alto, and, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it's coming to some of your cities as well. But so I guess one thing I said there was in Santa Clara County, I know only 1% of people bike to work regularly. Mm-hmm. In Palo Alto, it's about 6%. Mm-hmm. In some European cities, it's 25%. And of course, we have pretty fabulous weather in the Bay Area. It's, you know, there's no, and biking, some capital costs maybe for bike lanes, et cetera, but very little. No operating costs, of course, except for, you know, your bike tuning costs once a year. And it seems like a very cost-effective way. Have we considered putting money into that and seeing what we can do?
Well, Dr. Kishimura, that's, we were moving down a path where we would be looking at all sorts of strategies to be funding this summer. And because, in large part, I think the free transit was looking like it's starting to evaporate, right? So we should really start to emphasize some of these other approaches. And we'll continue to do so. But as staff right now, we're going to look to see how we can maybe keep the free transit element of it while we begin to explore the approaches you're talking about as well and seek to be able to fund some of those. It's just going to take some homework on behalf of staff. And that's what we plan to do.
Great. Thank you. Director Alcoma.
Thank you. Is this... I can't tell.
Yes, it is. Okay. You're on. You're always on, Gail.
I'm on. Thank you. First of all, I wanted to comment about what I think our overall tone should be whenever we do these programs from public outreach that deal with free transit. And I really want to compliment Jack on this one. You are a stellar representative in terms of your non-threatening voice in those ads. I've been saying that all along.
You think it should be more threatening?
I want to finish. It's a wonderful, positive thing. And when you hear it, and whoever plays the guitar behind it makes it non-threatening. And Tim, that's wonderful. But more than that, it's the who's done that deserves a great deal of credit, because what it is it's positive and it's encouraging and it's reinforcing, and it does make a difference. In my local community where I live, people have said, "I've heard that guy. That's really nice. Kind of makes you feel guilty when you go get the wood," is what one guy told me. But it's positive. And the way you're saying it, which is, you know, one little log thrown on can ruin mm-hmm. your whole right. neighborhood, kind right. of. It's really well done. And I commend you for that.
Appreciate that.
And
mm-hmm.
I think we should keep that up.
I the think second. You should have a cap,
Jack. Cap? Director McGoldrick?
I'm not finished.
I'm sorry, Director McGoldrick.
I'm not finished.
You took a breath, and that was an opening.
I'm sorry.
That was the comment.
The second one, in other words, I want to say keep it positive and keep that tone up and keep, we need to keep doing that. That's my first observation. Secondly is, I wonder whether or not it's possible. We have Adopt-a-Highway programs where Caltrans says, can the local JC do, you know, clean up from here to here? And can the Kiwanis clean up? And then they get to put up a sign. Is there such a thing as maybe we should look at with industry adopting a bus line for kids? I can't see anything more positive than this is the Shell bus that provides free transportation for kids. I'm making it up, a Shell. It can be any of the producers we have, industrial producers. And it can be manufacturers. It can be in Silicon Valley. But they may be interested if they get the identification that it's public transit, but it is paid for by Quantex or whoever it might be. And I really would like to explore that, and we have a lot of contacts here within on the board who may be able to help with that outreach program. It would be expensive, but I think it would be so positive also that it would be worth it. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Director McGolder?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up to Senator Parada's friend, Hal Brown. One of the important things that has happened, of course, in other countries, and I want to point to London, is exactly what Director Brown pointed to. the Transport for London, under the leadership of current Mayor Ken Livingston, currently seeking his third four-year term. Besides all the congestion management work that he's famous for, has created a free transit system for 16-year-old and under, completely free. And while it costs some money, working that out is not rocket science. It's a Robin Hood world that we live in usually anyway. But I think what Director Brown points out is something we all should strive to do in every one of our counties and cities and so on. So just on that point, you know, that it indeed is something that I know the two-year program that they did up in Director Brown's area was incredibly successful. We served together on the bridge board, the Golden Gate Bridge Board, and we talked about this recently. The bridge board doesn't have too much money to spare these days, but spare in the air. I think in London they have another program. Actually, throughout the UK it's called the Air and the Spare, but that has to do with William and Harry. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, Director McGoldrick. You know, Director Haggerty, you haven't... Everybody else has talked today. Yeah. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
We all are doing fine.
Oh, good. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jack. Are there any other questions for anyone? Hearing none, we'll move on. And thank you for the updates on in the summary of Winter PM and Spare the Air. We'll now go into closed session. So if we could clear the room of all non-essential personnel, we will do that. We have a brief closed session on labor negotiations. All right, Mr. Bunger, if you would report out of closed session, please.
The board met in closed session on item 8 on the agenda and received a report from staff and provided direction to staff on that item.
Thank you, Mr. Bunger. We will now go to item number 9, the report of the executive officer, APCO.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, a couple items just real quick. You all haven't been meeting too often in terms of committees, but you're about to, so I just wanted to highlight for the board that we have a lot of committees meetings upcoming, including budget and finance, where you're going to be hearing fee proposals and budgets, mobile source committee, public outreach again, ledge committee, a variety of committee meetings. So I just mentioned that to you since you're about to roll up the sleeves again. A big issue, Mr. Chairman, I was mentioned for everybody's edification was the I-bond issue, if you don't mind, or if would you like to cover that?
No, go ahead.
The California Resources Board is going to be hearing on the 28th of February, a discussion and a staff proposal to allocate the infrastructure bonds in California. We're slated to receive as much as $35 million here in the Bay Area. There is somewhat of a move afoot by the San Joaquin Valley to somewhat cut down our percentage. And so that I just wanted to highlight for all the board that is a concern of ours, and we're going to be certainly expressing to the California Resources Board to ensure that we do continue to get what we believe is at least the appropriate portion for the Bay Area. And so that's going to play out next week, Mr. Chairman, as you know. Finally, I just want to mention there has been some community meetings. There's been a great deal of concern raised by some community representatives at a meeting we had last week. Mr. Chairman's very aware of this. We had a meeting in Richmond where we held a meeting to hear the input from the community on the a Chevron refinery expansion project. They are going through a program where they are replacing a lot of processes, and then they're increasing they're not actually increasing the throughput, but they're replacing a lot of equipment, a lot of part of the refinery. The community is particularly concerned about this, and this was a somewhat rather heated discussion directed at the staff. And
I hear you had a good time, Jack.
Yes, Director Joy, I did personally. It was just loads of fun, but I wanted to bring it to the board's attention only because we are trying to reach out to the community groups, understand what their concerns are, seek to be able to address them as best we can. But it falls on the heels of community representatives. Have you heard from the Lennar about the Lennar project in Bayview? So I just let you all know that we spend a great deal of our time, resources, trying to understand what their concerns are, representatives, and trying to be able to deal with them. And that's going to be ongoing. But we did have a somewhat heated, argumentative exchange last Wednesday night.
Were you there, John?
No, I.
Director Joy was invited.
Invited, and he was.
I've gone to some of those before, many of those before. I just was not at this one.
The one thing I think, in behalf of the board, that I could say in the review of the meeting, that
We certainly will not tolerate, under any circumstance, the behavior of some of the members of the public and the physical threats that were made to the staff or to Jack in that. That won't be tolerated, it won't be accepted, and we will take every action to prevent that and keep it from coming. We have an excellent staff, and they do not deserve to be treated that way. Mr. Bates, you look like you were ready to say something.
Well, I support that. But that sounds like one of our normal meetings.
Yeah, I know. We're going to bring the Marines in next time to help us with this one. Bring the Marines in. Jack, is that everything?
That's my report.
Thank you very
much.
We probably
don't have parking.
And I have nothing to report. Board member comments? Yes, I'm sorry, Michael.
Just follow up on that.
Oh, sure.
Why are we the lead on that?
Director Szymanski, we're not actually the lead. The City of Richmond is actually the lead on the CEQA document. We elected, and I personally decided that what we ought to do is make sure we have a community meeting because it's a somewhat unusual case. It's a situation where Chevron is proposing to make some changes to the facility, but the emissions aren't increasing. And yet the communities feel like they want to have a say over what are the emissions estimates, what is being proposed, how are you going to be able to deal with this, what are the backed requirements, things like that. So, you oftentimes you can't. You can't win for losing, but in this case. And so we did decide to take this extra step, and it's clearly they reacted, and they have a lot of concerns. So we're going to be meeting with them, continue to meet with them.
The troubling part of it is that the City of Richmond was advised of the meeting and was asked for some security to be present, and they did not send any security at all. And that's totally interesting. Director Daly, you had a comment?
On
whatever you'd like to talk about. Oh, board member comments?
Yes.
Thank you.
Just for staff, I'm possibly interested in pursuing a local carbon tax in San Francisco. I was just wondering if this is something that's been discussed amongst Air District staff, and if staff could possibly work with me on developing some sort of model ordinance for local jurisdictions to move forward with some sort of carbon tax to deal with the issue of climate change on a local level, and then perhaps if enough of us move in that direction, obviously regional and then bigger than that.
Mr. Chairman, would be glad to work with Director Daly's office, and this was talked about in a limited sense at the Climate Protection Committee. We can certainly expand that discussion also to.
I think that would be a good place to begin the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Well, first, Director Joya.
I'm sorry. I pushed it by mistake.
Oh, okay. Mayor Bates.
Yes, I would also be very interested in that in that discussion. Also, Jack, I was wondering if you could either tell me now or in the near future where the odor plan is with the Pacific Steel casting.